Now for today, it is indeed my pleasure to introduce a gentleman who certainly needs no introduction to this community, but a man who certainly deserves the most gracious introduction that words can provide. I recall a very hot Tuesday evening in July of 1983 when I returned to this campus after a 22-year absence with a letter stating that I could pick up a key in Metzger, to Metzger at the switchboard. Well, Metzger I'd never heard of, but switchboard I knew, so I went to the switchboard and discovered that it had become Chapel of the Holy Apostles and somebody had built a great big tower on top of it. So I thought perhaps the bulletin board in the Walter Arch would contain some information that might be helpful to me. It didn't, but I discovered something else on the bulletin board that I'll never forget. There was posted on that bulletin board in Walter Arch one of the most beautiful and sensitive letters that I have ever read in my lifetime. It was addressed to the seminary community, and it expressed appreciation for the prayers and the pastoral support during a recent and very, very serious illness, and was signed by Dr. Mortensen. I read that letter twice, and I still recall my initial emotional response to that letter. One was a genuine excitement about joining a community that could express love and concern in such a way that it would elicit such a magnanimous expression of appreciation. And the second emotion that I had was one of hope that I might meet the man who authored the letter, not just because I had never met a man who spelled Fred with two E's, but because I wanted to know a person who could express such faith and sensitivity as was contained in that letter. Well, I have met the author to my joy and delight. To call Dr. Mortensen a friend of seminarians, of course, is to understate the facts. Those of you who have been the recipients of his medical skills know that he is much more than merely a friendly physician, and his care and concern extend far beyond your physical well-being. If you're not aware of it, you should know that Dr. Mortensen's services as seminary physician come to us from the goodness of his generous heart, and that's a commodity that's sort of rare in our day and age. A bit of background, Dr. Mortensen is a graduate of New York Medical College, and he trained at Washington University Medical School, where he was a clinical instructor for many years. As a churchman, not only very active in his own parish, but on a synodical level, he served on a variety of boards and committees and subcommittees of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, including the Board for Social Welfare, the CTCR, the Board of Mission Services. His topic this morning, not particularly a pleasant one, but certainly a very relevant one, preparing for the AIDS epidemic, a medical and pastoral perspective. Please help me welcome our good friend and our seminary physician, Dr. Mortensen.
Thank you. I'll never live up to that. All right. Let me start. I have a poster here I'll pass around now because it'll take time to get around the room. You can't see it from where you are, so just pass it about. It has to do with what I'm going to say here. I'm going to deal with this subject from the perspective of myself in my ancient age standing here, and give you another way of looking at this phenomenon known as AIDS, and perhaps you have been introduced to. In my lifetime, a very dramatic event occurred. It occurred in 1948, when I think an historical event occurred that had never occurred before on this planet, when Edward Teller, some of you may have heard of this man, the father of the hydrogen bomb, made the announcement to the world, "It is now within the realm of possibility for us to build a cobalt bomb, and one exploded cobalt bomb will end all life on Earth." That occurred in 1948. That event, I think it's safe to say, coming out of what Edward Teller said, occupied, I would say, was the most significant topic that has been discussed for almost 40 years. Also in 1948, though it's interesting to note, another event occurred that didn't make a lot of headlines, you may not be aware of, was the introduction of TV to the general public. And again, an historic event, in my opinion, occurred. The difference is it hasn't been considered as such. But for the first time in the history of the Earth, mind control became a possibility through TV or through the media. Now, the media has very cleverly realized that the two most interesting topics on Earth is what captures your audience so you can sell toothpaste or, you know, persuade to your political persuasion, or if you have a religion and you want to broadcast it, the way to do it is through TV. But there's two topics that always gain attention and get you the highest ratings. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you what they are. Number one, of course, is violence. And number two is sex. Now, for the first time in 40 years, apparently violence is about to go into second place. Sex now is the main topic of the world today. For the first time, violence appears to have been driven off the front page by sex. I was talking to Dean Vogel. Sunday, I told my wife, would you collect the AIDS articles from the paper? I have lost reading the paper anymore. I don't have time to read the whole thing. So I told her, go through the whole papers every day since this last Sunday. That's only 4 days ago. There were five major stories on AIDS since last Sunday in the headlines of the Post-Dispatch, I mean on the front page. That's amazing in that short space of time. And of course, the main word that has been coined for the public to be aware of in the last month or so, and now occupies, you know, innumerable articles, media discussions, TV, we tried to count them up. We know of at least four or five major discussions that have occurred this week alone on this subject. And the big word now, instead of hydrogen bomb, is condom. So you probably all noticed that. That's the new word we discussed. Instead of dropping the bomb, we'll discuss the condom from now on. Now, the 40 years medically that I'm speaking of, or the approximate 40 years, we had the good fortune of being blessed with having gonorrhea greatly diminished in incidence. Syphilis was almost on the verge of somebody saying, maybe we're going to eliminate it. And we did quite well, but if I may be sarcastic, the media has done better. Gonorrhea and syphilis have greatly increased in incidence in the past 10 years, to the point where both of them are beginning to scare the public health officials. And then, as you may all be aware, unfortunately, gonorrhea now is rapidly becoming resistant to penicillin. So we now have a disease that is getting to the stage of being as serious as it was when I first began medicine a long time ago. The sex revolution had so evolved in the last 20 years particularly, and maybe most significantly the last 10 years, that it evolved to the point where I can remember personally being in the room of a patient in the hospital, and you know, the main program, for those of you who are not up on this, the most by far popular program on TV, at least daytime, and at least from my perspective, I think it is the most popular program on TV, of course, is the talk show that you all have heard about. The famous individual that introduces everything new, and I remember watching him having two homosexuals on his program who were married, had officially been married by some pastor someplace. And they were there protesting the fact that wherever it was they lived, I think it was the state of California, was objecting to their adopting children. And, of course, Donahue was sympathetic and appealing, you know, to us. Why are we so prejudiced against these two homosexuals? That's how far we evolved. However, that evolution, as you are all well aware if you're watching the media or listening, has had an incredible change in direction in the past year. We have now come upon AIDS. And as I stand here today, as of this date, 3/25/87, that disease is the first disease in recorded history that has a 100% mortality. Think of that. There has never been a known cure as of this moment. That's a shocking fact if you think about it for a while. I brought a few medical journals along, so in case you're challenging something I say, you can read them yourself. This is from the British Medical Journal, just to quote a thought. This new virus, which produces a persistent, you should listen to this statement, it's quite dramatic, which produces a persistent viremia, that's a spread of viruses through the bloodstream, for life, and causes a slow viral encephalopathy, that's an invasion of the brain, after a mean incubation period of many years, will produce a self-sustaining epidemic. Indeed, it will produce a lethal pandemic, or worldwide epidemic, of a magnitude that has never been seen in human history. This is what AIDS is doing right now, today. It is spreading over the earth. We know that millions are infected. It's not a million. It is millions over the face of the earth, and it is spreading. It has invaded the brain of a huge number of people. They are walking around apparently well, because the incubation period is 5 to 10 years. They're walking around in our society, and they will be here for a long, long time. So the chance of this not spreading seems quite small if, you know, something else doesn't happen. Now, where did this come from? That's a subject you don't hear a lot about anymore. I guess most people have given up trying to figure it out. But initially, for what it's worth, it was believed to have begun in Africa, but that's questioned by some people. It was first actually diagnosed in Europe, but the people who had it in Europe were people who came from Africa, or also who came from Haiti. Haiti is kind of a unique place. For those of you who are not up on the place, it has an incredible homosexual and drug intravenous population, apparently far in excess of any place almost on earth. You might be interested to note, by far the largest place for this today, of course, has shifted. It is now the United States. All the way now, I'm sure you've heard the latest, Europe is now beginning to quarantine people. And, of course, who is in first place to be quarantined? If you don't know it, it's Americans. We now have Africans, Americans, and Haitians as unwanted citizens in Europe. That is rapidly evolving. Interestingly, now this is my own statement, so don't say that somebody else is saying this and then the theology professors can jump on me when I say it. But in Leviticus 11, 1 through 3, if those of you want to look this up sometime, and it's repeated in Deuteronomy 14:7, that statement, which is, by the way, came out of a medical journal, it didn't come out of my head, so I won't take credit, came out of the research scientist in England who made the observation that the same virus that the AIDS virus is exists in the intestines of sheep, goats, and cattle. And as you will recall in those two passages, the Lord said, you may eat the animals that chew their cud and their hooves are split. And of course, if you think through what I'm going to say here, and I am saying, the implication is that this, for the first, or the, this is an example of a recent virgin soil epidemic that has crossed a species barrier. That is the scientific thought of some scientists. were working on the origin of AIDS. In other words, it crossed from them into the human being through the feces. And it's just an interesting thought that they came to that thought. Now, AIDS occurs in the setting. You're not told this today. You're told now very nice things about AIDS. I mean, we're already watering down how you get this thing. But the original epidemic began in areas where cultism is very common, such as Haiti and in Africa, where scarification is routine. In other words, the use of infected needles to, you know, make pictures on yourself. Intercourse with an extreme number of partners. When the thing broke out in San Francisco, it's incredible if you read the facts that were first discovered. The ones who got AIDS first were people who were having intercourse with other males, and the average was 1,000 people, if you can believe what I'm saying. That seems hard to believe. In Africa, occurred in large number in people that used the rectal approach as a means of birth control. It was first found in great numbers in bathhouses, such in New York City and in San Francisco, in the intravenous drug addicts. Let's take a passage from Sir William Osler. You don't know who that is, but he's the Walter of medicine. He's to us like Walter is to you. The bathhouses and brothels were boarded up. Prostitutes were warned that they would be branded on the cheek if they continued to walk the streets. Special hospitals were built for the diseased, and infected travelers were prevented from entering by a ring of armed sentries. The year was 1494. The epidemic, syphilis. The place, the cities of Western Europe, the mysterious plague, hitherto unknown, struck terror into all hearts by the rapidity of its spread, the ravages it made. Now, this author states, the year is 1986. The epidemic, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, the place, the cities of Western Europe, and even more prominently, the capitals of the New World. Again, bathhouses have been closed, this time over the protests of the civil libertarians. Carriers of the disease have not been branded, although William Buckley advocated that they should be tattooed on the upper arm and buttocks so they can be identified. Special hospitals have not yet been built, but special wards are in effect to isolate them, and our cities are not yet ringed by sentries. But the United States Public Health Service is trying to propose regulations that would bar aliens with AIDS and, in effect, would keep them isolated from society. Now, when Christopher Columbus left the New World in 1493, just an interesting thought that has fascinated those studying AIDS, there were several of his sailors in the hold of the ship that were extremely ill, including the captain of the Nina. When they got back to Spain, the physician in charge of this said that we have brought a new disease back to Spain, which, by the way, turned out to be syphilis. And the island they came from was called Hispaniola. Everybody knows where that is? Yes? That's Haiti. Same place that there's much evidence, even now, that maybe that's where it began. Just an interesting thought. Now, what does AIDS do? The normal human immune system, and I presume you're not up on that, is the most complex system in the human body, with perhaps the exception of the human brain with its memory and specificity. But the immune system literally can discriminate millions of foreign objects without any difficulty. Simply put, without a lecture on what does AIDS do, AIDS destroys a certain cell in the body which, in effect, is able to discriminate and send out discriminators as to what foreign object may be invading the body. Without this, defenses almost cease. That chart you're passing around has just a few of the things. They develop all kinds of infections that are virtually unknown, except in people who are being treated for cancer and are what we call immunosuppressed, or in people with transplants who are immunosuppressed, and their resistance almost ceases. But it is nothing in comparison with AIDS. Even immunosuppression, even total body radiation, is not as severe as the effect of AIDS. I don't know if you want to hear about any of these terrible diseases. I think it's enough if you look at that, so I won't go into all these terrible things. There are really horrendously terrible things that happen to the patient with AIDS. You want to say someone goes through a terrible ordeal. This is truly the disease that puts you through a terrible ordeal. Now, how do you get AIDS? Maybe this section is the most important one for you to hear about. Clearly, the most common way to get AIDS is rectal sex. Second is the use of contaminated needles. Whether you're a drug addict, you get a tattoo, you get a blood transfusion, whatever it may, but you have a needle that either the needle is infected or the blood is infected, that you, or the blood product, whatever it may be. The third way you can get it is from a mother giving it to her own child, in other words, in utero. And sadly, also breastfeeding transmits AIDS. You may have heard this very morning that Koop, the Surgeon General, you may have heard the news, among many other things said today and yesterday, was anybody who contemplates becoming pregnant, he advises now, you should be tested first for AIDS. That was announced today. It was on the news, in case you missed it. It shocked me, too, but I don't know if it shocks you. It shocked me. I can imagine myself, I'm not an obstetrician, sitting in an office and telling a woman who's, you know, in perfect health and has a nice husband, have you been tested for AIDS? That's what you're supposed to do now. Kind of sad. Just a couple of theological comments. I shouldn't do this, but they did tell me, say something about that, didn't you? Romans 2, I suppose I shouldn't read them, you're already experts on all this, but in the 15th verse, it's interesting to note that what I call that famous passage, their conduct shows that what the law commands is written in their hearts. Their consciences also show that this is true, since their thoughts sometimes accuse them and sometimes defend them. And so according to the good news I preach, this is how it will be on the day when God, through Jesus Christ, will judge the secret thoughts of all. Now, what has that got to do with all this? It's just interesting to note that in societies, if you want to use the word, are primitive, not westernized, not occidental, not with it, they don't have any possibility of getting AIDS. Are you all aware of that? I mean, in other words, these aberrations are really rare. They don't have these kind of problems. Problems only occur in the with it societies. And then, of course, the verse that I've heard, or the section that I've heard discussed, I guess, most of my adult life, Romans 1:18 through 27, which you probably know all about, and I'm, you know, shouldn't be reading this to you, but that's the famous passage that goes into a discussion of God's anger is revealed from heaven above all the sin and evil of the people whose evil ways prevent the truth from being known. And without reading all the way through that, but I'll jump down to 26. Because they do this, God has given them over to shameful passions. Even the woman pervert the natural use of their sex by unnatural acts. In the same way, the men give up natural sexual relations with women and burn with passion for each other. Men do shameful things with each other, and as a result, they bring upon themselves the punishment they deserve for their wrongdoing. Now, let me make a dramatic point, because it's a question that most of you, if you didn't ask, you will ask somebody, so I'll answer it. AIDS and syphilis are very difficult to get. If this were not true, the human race right now would be gone.
And if AIDS were easy to get, we are finished, and my whole standing here is a waste of time. If it were easy to get. There have been extensive studies done now, and stupidly I didn't bring it, but if somebody wants to see it, I'll get the medical journal, but there's been really good studies to show that families who live in the home with AIDS patients, to the point that the AIDS patient dies at home, and now you may have heard hospices are being set up all over the country. I had supper with a cousin of mine in San Francisco, January. She is in a group, if you're interested in what's happening there, where her church has taken shifts, there's three AIDS patients in their neighborhood, and they are shifting, nursing, and taking care of these AIDS patients who are home now. They're not in hospitals, in other words. But the point I'm trying to make here is there has never been a case of AIDS documented in these families, and this is something like 100 families, who have had the same drinking glasses, the same dishes, the same laundry, the same everything, without a direct blood-to-blood contact or sex. I think that's an important point to make, so that you know you're not walking around here thinking if you shake hands with somebody with AIDS, you have it. That's not true. Just like syphilis in the old days, they'd say, well, I'm afraid to go in a toilet. I might get it from the toilet seat. That is not true. That does not happen. You get syphilis from sex. You get AIDS from sex, needles, blood. You don't get it by casual contact. Most of the women, and you're now hearing that the women are getting AIDS, and that's rapidly increasing, it's still a blood-to-blood contact, and although at this date, 1987, the vast majority of women who have it are either married or girlfriends of drug addicts who use needles. Almost all cases so far recorded are in that category. Now, there's no question it's going to become more common in women, but it's still going to be from something done, and it's unlikely to be from natural acts. Let's put it that way. That is really difficult to accomplish. And I don't want this to be watered down, because you'll hear this, you know, anybody can get it. Well, that's really not true. And the people who have it, even the prostitutes who have it, are not people that have just performed normal things. These are people who have had rectal intercourse, have used needles, and still, the vast majority, that's the story. Now, somebody's going to ask about the communion cup, I'm sure, so why don't I just answer it? I would say without any hesitation myself, I am in favor of the common cup if you're asking me as an individual. I like the common cup. I have no problem with it. On the other hand, if you say, is it possible to get AIDS from a communion cup, at least to play it straight, let me propose an incident that might never happen, but of course is theoretically possible. This statement I'm making came out of the Atlanta CDC, the place that is the head of infectious disease. If you had an AIDS patient whose gums are bleeding, let's postulate this. He has disease in his mouth, and which, by the way, most of them have, as you'll see on that poster. And then you yourself have a bleeding gum. Now, if we both, you know, go like this together, there's no question it's possible for me to get AIDS. Yes, it is possible. But let's say in a normal individual, it's virtually impossible. Saliva is not a way that AIDS is transmitted. Saliva does not transmit it. I want you to hear that, because you will read places where people will say outright it's transmitted that way. It is not. There is no evidence for that. Now, as to the treatment of AIDS, you probably all read the depressing and obvious sad fact that to treat a patient with a new drug that has just recently been FDA approved, called AZT, azido-thymidine, if you like, costs $8,000 to $10,000 a year for the patient. So obviously, the AIDS patient is in serious trouble from that point alone, the price of the stuff. Will that cure AIDS? The chances are overwhelming. The answer is no, it will not cure AIDS. What will it do? It does restore some of the T4 lymphocytes that you see there, the helper cells. They are assisted in survival. But basically, no one pretends that it cures the disease. Now, the more interesting discussion, at least scientifically, does AZT perhaps change the course of what's called ARC, AIDS-related complex? Have you all heard that word? AIDS-related complex is the individual who has certain symptoms, for example, weight loss, a lot of lymph nodes enlarged in his body, fever, unexplained coughing that just continues. Why is he doing this? In other words, he has the suspicion he may have AIDS, but he hasn't really got any proof for it yet. That's called ARC. There are a lot of ARCs walking around who are potentially, there's a possibility in this that nobody knows the answer because it hasn't even happened yet, that those people may really be benefited by azidothymidine. That's to be found out. Recently, ribavirin, if you're interested, has just come out research-wise and seems to have an effect on AIDS. Might mention to you, you've heard about the economics of AIDS. So far, the first 10,000 cases cost $6.3 billion. That is as much as it cost the United States for all the expenses involved in treating cancer of the lung, all the auto accidents in the United States, and all of the lung disease, all put together, is how much the first 10,000 cases of AIDS has cost. And, as you know, 10,000 is only the first 10,000. We now have 32,000 is the last count. Now, to become a little repulsive, but nevertheless, since you're supposed to be informed, you're going to be pastors. These are the Public Health Service guidelines that are recommended to people to prevent AIDS. This is not something hanging in the back room. This is being sent out to anybody who wants to know how to prevent AIDS. Number one, do not have sexual contact with people who are known to have or be suspected of AIDS. Do not have sex with multiple partners or with persons who have had multiple partners. This includes, of course, prostitutes. Incidentally, if you want to have compassion, think of the poor prostitute today. They're soon going to be out of business, the first time maybe in the history of the world, if you want to have sympathy for somebody. The more partners you have, the greater the risk of AIDS. That must be underlined, because almost everybody so far with AIDS, barring this sad, innocent bystander, is not somebody who just had one tough break in life. That's not true. People who have AIDS are people who have had tremendous amount of sex one way or another, or use needles. Do not have sex with people who use drugs, IV, needles, including prostitutes, most of whom are drug addicts, incidentally. For male homosexuals and promiscuous heterosexuals, use condoms. Avoid oral genital contact. Avoid sexual practices that cause injury or rips tissue, open mouth, deep kissing, contact with any body fluid such as semen, blood, feces, or urine. A man who has had sex with another man since 1977 should not donate blood, plasma, sperm, body organs, or other tissue, and positive women should not breastfeed. Now, something interesting is the behavior effect. I'm trying to watch that clock there. What has this done to our society? It's kind of interesting. I don't know if you find that subject interesting. I find it fascinating. Maybe that's my, you know, being around a long time showing. But I find it quite fascinating what's happening. You know, for many, many, many years, we've heard the death penalty is not a deterrent. And you may have heard or heard somebody mention that in Missouri, they took a survey of the people in the state of Missouri. Do you believe that the death sentence is a deterrent? And 95% said, I do. 95%, if you can believe that. That was about 5 years ago. They took a recent survey, I heard, where it dropped. It was about 75% believe it. But of course, the courts, the judges, etc., obviously think we're crazy. So we don't have the death sentence, you know, except after 500 appeals. However, let's take a comparison with AIDS. Does getting AIDS have an effect on behavior? It's a question, interesting question. I told you the incidence of syphilis is rapidly rising during the past 10 years. Can you believe in the last year alone it dropped 60%? That's unbelievable. In 1 year. The incidence of rectal and oral gonorrhea almost has ceased to exist. And that was rapidly rising until about a year ago. Incredible on the Sunday Post-Dispatch to show the evolution that's rapidly happening via the media. They had an interesting article. You really ought to read that if you haven't seen it. There was in the magazine section about what effect has this got on somebody who wants to have sex. And interesting statements, just a few of them. Some people say, well, you can't trust anybody anymore, so you don't know what you're getting into. Some feel now sex is a suicide act. Anyone who's not monogamous during the past 10 years obviously could get AIDS. I mean, that's another thought a lot of people now have. And can you believe it says in the Post, the wages of sin are death. This is in the article. Now, there's one area, though, that's an exception to all things that are happening today, and that is the teenager. And that's a real problem. You, I'm sure, have at least heard the rumors that there's a controversy about condoms. And our Surgeon General, who is, I might comment, I believe is safe to say, unless somebody here criticizes me, is a very fine Christian man. Koop, the Surgeon General. And I understand why he is saying what he is saying. I don't particularly agree with him, but in fact, I disagree with him, but it is his point of view, and I understand why he's saying it. And his reason for saying it is, teenagers are irresponsible, and what else can we do but to go into schools today and teach everything possible about sex, no matter how gory it may be, because it's the only way we'll stop these kids from having intercourse and stop them from getting AIDS and spreading AIDS to the rest of the population. He sincerely believes that. And you may or may not be aware of it, there's a lot of public health departments in this country that do believe it. I was in California, as I said recently, and I heard a lecture by the head of the California Public Health Department. He preaches this everywhere all around the state of California. Interestingly, the state of California violently disagrees with him and will not appropriate money to support him. Just an interesting thing. But you know, the same thing is true in Missouri, and if you're not up on it, the same thing has happened here. Here, the public health director is violently opposed to sex education, all this stuff, so it's not going to happen here unless, you know, administrations change. But there is a real debate going on as to what should be done. In the meantime, there is a group led by Phyllis Schlafly, if you're interested, who's, you know, violently opposing all this on the basis that what you should teach instead is no sex, you know, for people who are not married. Married sex, in other words, teach what Christianity teaches. I shouldn't use the word Christianity, if you pardon me being sarcastic, but there are churches, you know, who ordain homosexuals today in this country, so, you know, I'll clarify it a little bit. Missouri Synod is perfect. Easy. I was right. Now, interesting, in the, as I said, everybody in the world is getting into this. In yesterday's paper, I guess it was yesterday, Paul Donahue, the doctor who writes the answer to all questions, it's amazing to me. I had to stop and read it three times what he said. Not that I'm faulting him for being bad or something, but that it's in black and white and the, you know, that it comes as an official statement is kind of refreshing. You won't get, this is the end of his article on AIDS. You won't get AIDS if you share a long-standing monogamous and drug-free relationship with a partner who is also AIDS-free. That's the only way to have 100% protection from this fatal illness. Interesting how, you know, thoughts have evolved, because a couple of years ago, I hate to be nasty, but that same man didn't think it was wrong to be a homosexual. He said so in an article. You know, recently Gaddafi, he has to get into every act, made the statement that we are terrorists and have spread AIDS. That's where it came from. You know, he made that a public statement. And so that they kept their record straight. A year ago, Russia said the same thing, but now have apologized for saying it. So they're not calling us the, you know, founder of AIDS. Now, finally, I know you have to leave soon. The counseling people with AIDS and people have ARC, people have relatives, etc., with this disease, what a few facts that might help you to know about AIDS and these people. To show you how rapidly this is, I was telling your good dean here, believe it or not, I myself have now seen or had to do with a third AIDS patient. That's kind of remarkable, considering I'm sitting in St. Louis. I'm just talking about the practice of medicine. I personally have seen three of them. So that tells you something. That, you know, if that were every physician saying the same thing, imagine how many we're talking about. 80% of AIDS patients, these are things worth knowing for your understanding of AIDS when you're talking to an AIDS patient, have, it is estimated, central nervous system invasion. You realize what I just said? 80%. Now, no one can really answer this completely, but it's interesting. A study was done by a group of psychologists on these people, on a lot of AIDS patients, and they found, at least as far as they can determine, this is hard to answer, but 80% of these people have an extreme emotional problem. Now, whether this is psychiatric or organic, more likely it is truly organic. It's worth knowing this, that when you deal with an AIDS patient, you're dealing with someone who hasn't got all his faculties. That's not said to be sarcastic. It's said to be quite sad. But their brain is invaded quite almost for sure in 80% of people. Secondly, most drug addicts who have gotten to this point, and this is the second big group, you may or may not be aware that most of these people have a schizoid personality, a schizophrenic-like personality, which in simple language is due to the drugs they've been taking. Most of these people have been on drugs for years, have taken intravenous drugs in great amount, and most of them have significant brain damage. So it's worth knowing these kind of things. Another group that you would more likely encounter, I suppose, in San Francisco than you would in New York. In New York, most of them are drug addicts. In San Francisco, most of them are homosexuals. Is the not bum in the street type, but the homosexual who's a success in life, a yuppie, a hedonist, humanist, who doesn't believe in the order of creation. And that's the sizable group in San Francisco. Now, I don't know if you're going to find a lot of those in St. Louis. The three I saw were definitely in the bottom of the barrel group. They were drug addicts. One was a sex homosexual, the other two were drug addicts. The fourth group, by the way, to not jump over what I call the hedonist group, maybe that's the group you would have the easiest time dealing with, if I were to guess. The prostitute group, I don't know if you folks have had opportunities with them to counsel them, but I must comment from my experience personally, for what it's worth as a physician, they are the easiest group to deal with. Usually they are at the bottom of the barrel, they know it, and they want help. I might also say the homosexual is in that category too, certainly when he comes close to getting AIDS. Now, the innocent bystander is no different than anybody else. That's the hemophiliac, one who got a blood transfusion. Obviously, that is no different than anybody who has a fatal disease and is all shook up in simple language. Think of yourself as a homosexual if you can put yourself into such a category of the fear that has come over this community. The sex practices as studied in San Francisco in the homosexual population, it's incredible what's happened. It's all happened within a year or two. Their entire lifestyle, as we say, has totally changed. So that where somebody was having sex with everybody, now they're all terrified and really modifying what they're doing. Think of yourself as a bisexual. Just imagine the terror of such a person who is both and says to himself, I'm going to give my wife AIDS. How do I prevent that? He can't prevent it, except with a condom, of course. But the terror that this disease has brought to people has really modified not only people's sex life, but how, you know, they themselves are within themselves. Fear has taken over. I just brought a little article. I won't read it. A Life, L-I-F-E. There's a Christian ministry to homosexuals. There are a lot of things springing up, which I must say seems to have a very excellent approach. Billy Graham gave a beautiful sermon on this last week. Did you all hear it? I hope. No? Nobody? He spoke on AIDS and his effect. His approach was very simple. He was without sin, cast the first stone. In other words, have some compassion for people who are about to die. It's that simple. I think when you talk to an AIDS patient, you ought to tell yourself, this is no different than sitting in death row. Because these people expect to die, and they're going to. And they know it. I'm almost finished for those who are going to leave. I was asked a famous question, if I could speak about myself for a second, at New Orleans. I gave a famous speech. Some of you may have been there and remember it, but most of you not that old. I was asked to answer a question, what is homosexuality? Is it an inherited genetic defect, or is it some type of illness, whether it be organic or psychiatric? And my answer was the same as, I'm happy to say, finally the medical profession is saying, it's neither. That was the answer I gave, and I sat down. It's not a genetic defect. It's not an illness. It's no different than being a drug addict, an alcoholic. If you're interested, that's what alcoholics would say about a homosexual. They'd say, well, he's just like me. Or a drug addict, what's the difference? We got a hang up. But it is not an illness. If I can use an old-fashioned word, it's a sin. Now, I myself, this is the concluding statement, believe that AIDS, I'm optimistic as a physician, I believe that AIDS will either be cured or we will be blessed with a vaccine that will prevent it. We will be fortunate again. We survived 40 years without atomic warfare. I think we're going to survive AIDS. But you really have to ask yourself a question. How long is the Lord going to have patience with this world? How long does the world look and not see, listen and not hear? If ever there were a dramatic point to the human race, I certainly feel AIDS is that. And if this society, this world doesn't see it, I must say our future seems rather grim. And I'll stop at that point. For some questions, if you have any, I'll try and answer if I can. Yes, sir. No, I don't think you're right. So you don't think I'm some kind of a beast here. I have total compassion for the homosexual. I have no problem with that. And I hope you have no problem. These are people who are in dire distress. I don't see them as any different than
you know, someone Christ would have picked up as he walked along, because who could be worse off than a homosexual with AIDS? I can't think of anything worse, can you? I can't think of it, what it might be. I mean, this is truly the man at the bottom of the barrel. And we would hope you would have great compassion for these people. But on the other hand, I certainly, personally feel very strongly that we've been, not with me, you have been given a chance, the church that is, to say, here it is. I mean, if you don't believe in the order of creation, what better proof do you need? And I don't see how you could have anything more conclusive.
My own opinion. Let me throw something out to, since you got me a little worked up here. In San Francisco, something you might use if you want an impressive statement. Some of these things are impressive to say. In the city of San Francisco, there have been more deaths from AIDS, just listen to this, than all the deaths from World War I, World War II, the Korean War, and Vietnam put together. Just from sex alone, from AIDS. It's an interesting thing, isn't it, to say that? That's an incredible fact. If you don't know the figure, 1,000 people so far, or that was all in 1986, died in San Francisco from AIDS. 1,000. That's a lot of people. And, you know, next year it's probably going to be 2,000 because the rate is doubling every year, you know. And whatever it is, 1991, they predict there will be, now it's 32,000, it'll be 270,000 deaths. Yes, sir.
I believe it was in Time magazine said that there were some cases that were puzzling because they were not connected, as far as they could ascertain, to the three categories of sex, removal, and transfusion.
You're right. There are some such cases, and they're difficult to know what to say. If I can, I know this is a sarcastic statement, but I have to say it as a physician. When someone will say, you know, I never did anything wrong, let's put it that way. As a physician, you get to know, be patient, in 2 years or so, we'll find out. But somewhere, you know, something happened. And usually that's the case. Now, I'm not denying anything is possible. You know, obviously, simple intercourse could produce AIDS. Nobody can say it's impossible. But let's say it's very, very unlikely. There's got to be something added to it. And almost always, when it's really pursued, that has been the case. Now, you will read, by the way, in Africa, there's a lot of AIDS in patients who just have normal intercourse. They fail to mention those same people all use needles. I mean, how can you throw that away? You know, that's an important point.
So you're saying in the casual contact, as far as you know, there's no way just through that. Because I know, I've been told by some child.
Now, wait, I'm not talking about sex.
No.
I'm talking about, say, a drinking glass, a plate, or clothes, or whatever you want, sitting on a chair, or whatever you're thinking. The only case, by the way, of interest where casual contact has absolutely 100% been proven is in a mother who took care of, it was a relative who took care of a child with AIDS. This is a proven case where nothing happened, except the mother or this woman took care of this child 24 hours a day with AIDS. She got it. But then she had incredible contact, you know, with feces, urine, etc. I know that doesn't answer your question. We don't know the answer. That's the best way to say it. We're not sure. That's still a question mark. I think, though, it's important not to exaggerate and say you're going to get AIDS just by some casual thing. That's probably not true, almost 100%. You have to do something to get AIDS, usually. Unless you're an innocent bystander with blood, of course, that's an exception. Somebody here, yes.
I guess blood would be an issue that would be pretty important to us. What is the status now medically of the public blood supply, and would you take a blood transfusion under all circumstances?
Well, I don't know if I tell you this, you'll avoid me, but I've had several blood transfusions. So I'm an obvious possible victim. I've had several transfusions myself. But at any rate, would I take more? Yes, if I needed them.
But just of interest sake, the government is so shook up about this. It's not just the people that are shook up, that they have set up now, as of the latest that I know of, 200 centers in the United States to collect your own blood. In other words, that's seriously being done. And everybody now who has to have some kind of surgery, I mean big surgery, it is beginning over the whole country that they're trying to talk the patient or their relatives into, look, let's start saving it because you will need it. Now, the reason they're doing that is not for the reason you're thinking. They're doing it because nobody will give blood anymore. I hate to tell you this, but do you know where most of our, or a lot of our blood used to come from? And I don't fall on the floor. From homosexuals, drug addicts. You're aware of that. Does that shock you? About 10 years ago, the homosexuals went downtown here and gave the blood. They made money on that. So did the drug addicts. And that's the blood supply that was, you know, we had. Nowadays, of course, they are excluded. And I know if I say it, someone's going to pull an article out. But the blood is relatively, almost for sure, safe today. But you notice I didn't say 100%. It's not 100%. But it's very, very good. And I think what has happened is a lot of patients who formerly might have gotten a blood transfusion or even an operation, they may not get it in the future. That's possible. There may not be enough blood for them that is safe. That's possible. Yes, sir?
Do they test all donor blood now for
yes.
the virus?
Now they do. They did not in the past. They do now. They've been testing everybody. I probably have the wrong figure. I'm going to say it's about a year and a half. Everybody's been tested, 100%. You're going to tell me they didn't test you?
No. I'm just asking about HARP. Does that show up in the blood system?
Yes.
Is that also the HPV?
Right. Virus? You can make the diagnosis with a blood test, yes. You can. So the people who have ARC know that they're in the first stages of AIDS. They know this, and that's why they're so shook up. So if you're talking about a man who needs counseling, he really needs it, because he knows what his future is. It's very grim. Yes, sir?
You had mentioned earlier the incubation period between 5 and 10 years. Does the manifestation of the disease come upon one all at once? Is it gradual?
No, it's very gradual. And if you talk to one, I talked to this homosexual, actually, that I saw last week who has AIDS. He was sick for about a year. He didn't know it. I mean, he didn't know what he had, but he was sick and had, a few little symptoms, but they kept gradually getting worse. It's a very slow onset over several months, usually. It's not a dramatic beginning, usually. Yes, sir?
With the incubation period of 5 to 10 years, does that mean if society were to change immediately and stop
we have 10 years to look at. That's what we're talking about. No matter how good everything is, we're going to have AIDS increasing for the next 10 years for sure. That's positively. So that we don't know how many cases we're going to have, of course. That's a guess, but you know that they're rapidly increasing all the time. But you're right. We will have them for 10 more years. Somebody else had their hand. Yes, sir?
Do we know at what point in the incubation period
be transmitted tomorrow? That's at least thought to be true. Did you understand what I just said? At least theoretically it can be transmitted tomorrow. I mean, as far as we know, we don't really know. But we do know that people, this is well documented, people have gotten AIDS from a person with a negative blood test. And it takes, by the way, to shake you up a little bit, about 6 months to get a positive test. So in other words, now let me frighten you. I go and give a blood transfusion, and I have a negative test, and 6 months later it's positive, and you already got my blood. I mean, that's one of the horrors, you know, that we face. Yes.
Have you heard anything about the development of polypeptide that can be used in the active site of the healthy T cell, and in that way control
you mean in the research area?
Right.
Well, I've heard about it, but I can't tell you, you know, is it successful or what? You know, I shouldn't answer. I'm sure it's easy enough to find out, though.
Okay.
You know, if you're really interested, by the way, if any of you are, you know, have some unusual question, the CDC is extremely, you know, good about this. You can pick up the telephone and call them up, and they will answer your question. They will tell you. They're very good about it. And they'll send you information on that if you want. They're very, very cooperative. Also, another one is the National Institute of Health. They will also send you information.
The early literature refers to the exchange of body fluids. That's a little ambiguous language, apparently. It has to be more specific, doesn't it?
Yes, correct. Well, they're talking about sperm, blood, feces, urine. That's what they're speaking about, specifically. They used to say saliva, but there is no evidence that saliva spreads it. That's what they're talking about. Yes, sir.
I've heard a rumor maybe that it's possible for mosquitoes like some of the AIDS and transmission.
It's good you asked that, because that is a rumor, and it's been well studied, and it's not true. It's strictly untrue. If it were true, forget it. We're gone.
Well, if no more, I guess I should cease. Any questions?
Do you see that over time that the incubation period will be shortened? It'll be faster?
Will it get faster?
Yeah, instead of 5 months.
I don't think we know the answer to that question. And this, when I say 5 to 10 years, by the way, that's not an absolutely proven fact either. But that's the, you know, at least statistically seems to be the case. But I don't think we know the answer to that question yet. Difficult to answer. Yes, sir.
Jeff, I'm going to ask you to engage in speculative mathematics. So what I'm wondering is, with the new means of controlling it, or with the increased awareness of it, and the lessened likelihood that it will be passed on, is that eventually going to overtake the number of people that have it in such a manner that the curve starts to go down again? Or are there simply enough people that have it that due to the fact that the population that will not go down?
You are correct. If one thing will happen, I would, since you said speculate, let me speculate. If the human race decides to reform, you're correct. But if the human race follows its usual course in history, no, it won't happen. I mean, the bad thing that happens in all these things, maybe for 2 years, everybody will be all shook up. And then we'll get a drug that sort of controls it, but doesn't cure it. And then, you know, people say, well, it's not so bad after all, and then they'll proceed again. I'm being a pessimist, but that's what I would suspect will really happen. But you are right. If people like me could stand before audiences and terrorize them for the next 5 years, I believe the curve would go down. But I don't think we're going to be able to do that. Unfortunately, they'll get confident again and go back to their old ways. I hate to be negative, but I think it'll happen. Maybe one of the professors here could answer it better than I, what they think. I don't think people will change. I mean, not today they're changing, but not in the future. I'm pessimistic. What can I say? Yes, sir.
From time to time you hear calls for general population screening, either for employment or other situations like that. Can you comment on just what your opinion is on generally testing population or subpopulation?
Well, let me say it's not going to happen to begin with because of our courts are not going to let it happen. But forgetting if the courts did not exist, which they do, I have to say common sense would tell you to go back to the times that we did with TB and we were successful. Refresh those who never knew about this. But believe it or not, 20 years ago I could pick up a phone as a physician and say I have Mr. X over here who has active tuberculosis, and he lives in the house with people, you know, who might contract it. The public health department would immediately come out, take him away, and treat him. I mean, they would hospitalize him. He wasn't going to prison. He would be hospitalized and treated and cured. But the point is, he wasn't asked. He was taken. And he was treated. And we did control TB that way in the old days. Now, of course, today you could never do this because the courts wouldn't allow it. But if you had any common sense, obviously we should start doing something about controlling the spread, and we're not doing anything. The only thing that has worked is fear. I think, if you're honest, fear has been the only weapon that's been effective.
If that answers your question. In other words, lay it on. And that'll slow people down from spreading it. But otherwise, we have no mechanism for stopping it. Unless somebody has a brilliant idea. That's why Coop is so shook up, so feel sorry for him. It's his responsibility. He doesn't know what to do. I don't know what to tell him. He's upset because it's spreading. And nobody's stopping it. You know, to shock you, out in San Francisco, they have this in the medical journals all the time. In San Francisco, police capture the prostitutes, bring them into the hospital. They're tested for AIDS. They're 4+. And then the court says, let them go. You can't arrest them. And they're going right back out in the street to spread it some more. There is nothing you can do. That's a fact. You have drug addicts that have it. They're going right back out in the street, and they're passing their needles around. I mean, that's happening right now as we're speaking. We have no law to stop it. I'm not asking you to become lawyers. Yes. Well, you're an intelligent person, I must say. Maybe we'll put you in charge of this. You guys have a good thought there. Let me answer. There's two questions. She really raises some good questions. Now, let's say the AIDS patient comes in to me. I'm the physician. Or let's change it. You're the pastor. I think it's the same. What responsibility do I have? Number one, I will, by law, report it to the public health department. That's law. That's not option. That's law. So that we don't have to argue. Point two now, the man's married, for example. Let's make it up. He is married. Should I tell his wife? Now, I will tell you that I, as a physician, will tell his wife whether he wants me to or not. I feel morally I must do this to protect her. He may say, you can't do it and sue me. Well, I'll have to get sued. I'm still going to do it to protect her because it's a fatal disease. But on the other hand, where else do I go with that information? Are you saying he has AIDS? Is that what you're saying, or just positive test? He definitely has it. Well, I think what I would appeal to, and I believe I would win, which I have not heard of any instances yet where you would fail, is appeal to his you ought to get treated. And if you're going to get treated, of course, we're going to have to put you in a hospital, because usually these are very sick people. And if you're going to go in the hospital, obviously everybody's going to find out about it. So there is no confidentiality. Not if you have AIDS. But that isn't where the problem comes in. The problem comes in with ARC, A-R-C, where the person is not dying. You know, he's really in fairly good shape. Now what do you do? Because he's got a job or whatever it is he has. Do you tell everybody about it? I would say no. You have not got... I don't think you have a right to take him and hang him from a telephone pole and persecute him. No, you don't have that right. I think you have to tell his family, his wife. You must, in good conscience, contact his sex partners if you want to do something in the public health area to help. And I certainly would sit down and ask him about it so I can tell them about it. I think that's a moral obligation. And then I'm going to plead with him to change his habits. Are you asking, can I do it with a gun? No, I cannot. I can only beg him. I would have to say that proves nothing. If you talk about homosexuals, I would feel that your success rate should be extremely high, maybe 100%. But if you talk about a drug addict, your success rate is going to be zero.
And that's where we have a problem. Your prostitute rate, if they will not, you know, change their profession, it's going to be zero. But that's where the problem really lies, and I think that's where the public health department is really shook up. What do we do about that? They're not going to comply. You asked another question. I forgot what it was now. I lost it.
So one of my questions on what's the insurance carrier's approach?
Oh. You asked the worst possible question. They're so upset they're going to the Supreme Court. You may not have heard this. They are on their way to the Supreme Court. They don't feel that they should have to cover this because, you know, the bill is like this. And, you know, under our present law, they must cover it. They have no choice. Well, I think the only obvious answer, if you're thinking it through, it's going to be something where the public has to decide we're going to pay for this. In other words, this is going to have to become a national project. Because AIDS is a national event. You know, it's our, in a sense, you could say our country is at stake. So I don't think there's any options. We have to raise the money to cure AIDS. Or we may be talking about something much worse than we're discussing now. I mean, this is something that's bad. I don't think we can sweep it away. Am I answering your question? But I don't really, not that I feel sorry for insurance companies, but I don't think it's fair to them, you know, to ask them to pay for all this. This is a gigantic amount of money. Well, maybe make that the last statement, but as I said before, pardon me, as pastors, I would think the AIDS patient is second to nobody as your greatest, you know, mission opportunity. I can't think of anything better, you know, where you could really get to somebody and bring the gospel. Who else needs it more than an AIDS patient? For what that's worth.
The remaining couple questions, perhaps you can come up and ask. Thanks so much, Doctor.